Welcome to the Darrell McClain Show. I'm your host, Darrell McClain, and let's get into our episode.
Simply search for the T-Bone and Chick Brew podcast, available wherever fine podcasts are sold.
The Darrell McClain Show is fully listener-supported, independent media that won't lead you to tribalism. You can get a membership for as little as $3 a month at www.patreon.com/TheDarrellMcClain Show.
We talk about a lot of serious topics on this show. One very serious topic is women's health. One company that stood out to me was VSlay.com because the owner is very transparent about her own struggles in the women's health department and has great customer service, great deals, and frequent sales. You can check her out, her great customer service, products about women's health, and frequent sales at www.VSlay.com. That is www.VSlay.com. Be alone. That's the secret of invention. Be alone. That is when ideas are born. Our quote today comes from Nikolai Tolstoy. And let's get into our episode. So, roughly 9 months into the presidency, Joe Biden is on the verge of writing his name into the history books, and not in a good way. The latest polling from Gallup pegs the president's approval ratings at just 42%. That's the lowest of his term to date and the second lowest in any presidential Gallup poll as measured at this moment in their presidency over the last almost five decades. Here's a look at Biden's approval rating in comparison to his predecessors in Gallup's polling. All of the data comes courtesy of the terrific Gallup Presidential Approval Center. So at this point in their presidency, Donald Trump at 283 days was at 37%. Barack Obama at 271 days was at 52%. George Bush at 288 days was at 88%. Bill Clinton at 271 days was at 47%. George Herbert Walker Bush at 289 days into his presidency was at 70%. Ronald Reagan, with 286 days in the books of his presidency, he was at 53%. Jimmy Carter, with 277 days of his presidency, he was at 54%. It's also worth noting both Bushes had hugely high ratings at the stage of their presidencies thanks to external events. For George W. Bush, he was still in the stratosphere in the wake of the September 2011 terrorist attacks. For George Herbert Walker Bush, his numbers were inflated following the Tiananmen Square attack in China in June of 1989 and the perceived ending of the Cold War as well. Now, Biden's numbers have fallen precipitously in the Gallup polling over the last several months. As recently as June, a solid majority, 56%, of the country approved of the job he was doing. The number began to collapse at the end of the summer, dropping from 49% approval in August to 43% in September, and have stayed at a low number for the bulk of the fall. The reasons for Biden's polling decline is clear. A confluence of events, including disastrous pullout of America's troops from Afghanistan, the surge of COVID-19 cases due to the Delta variant, ongoing supply chain issues, and a focus on the continuous struggles of the president and Democrats in Congress to pass the bulk of his domestic agenda. Some of these developments most notably emerges of the Delta variant, as its ravaging of the unvaccinated in the country aren't necessarily Biden's fault. But when you are president, you have to take the blame for what goes wrong in the country, whether it's your fault or not. And that's where Biden finds himself. Now, it's also worth noting, as the numbers I stated before make clear, that there were presidents where the president stands in job approval 9 months into their terms is not always a predictor of how he will look when he runs for a second term. For example, George H.W. Bush lost re-election despite being at 70%, 280 days into his presidency. A ditto for Jimmy Carter at his 57% approval at his stage. Bill Clinton, on the other hand, won even though he was under 50%. Now, the real danger in Biden's current approval rating doldrums is for his party's candidates in coming midterm elections. If a president's approval ratings is 50% and his party 50% under, or under 50%, his party normally loses an average of 37 seats in the House. And that is average. In 2018, Trump's approval rating in the final Gallup poll before the election was mirrored by low 40% in Republicans' lost 40 House seats and the majority. In 2010, Obama's approval rating had dipped to 45% and Democrats lost 63 seats and a majority. In 1994, Bill Clinton's approval ratings was at 46% and Democrats lost 53 seats and a majority. So you get the idea that the evidence is pretty conclusive and none of it points to good news for Democrats in 2022. Now, of course, it's worth noting as well that in the last October 2021, not late October 2022, and that if Biden's and congressional Democrats can find a way to compromise on both hard infrastructure plan and the social safety net legislation, that Democrats could well have an appeal package of accomplishments to sell voters come next November. There's also a reality that trend lines of COVID-19 cases are headed downward, and if that keeps up, Biden could well benefit from some overall improved outlook among the populace. But at this moment, Biden's approval rating struggles puts his party in a dire political position, and one they have limited, very limited ability to control.
Technical term, not good. And for Democrats, there are even more troubling numbers underneath the surface. Joining me now, CNN senior data reporter Harry Enten. And the numbers here, they tell a clear story.
They do tell a clear story. You know, again, to use a technical term, not good. This is the trend in Joe Biden's job approval rating. You look at August 1st, you know, the approval was a 51. The disapproval was a 43. That was a net right there, a plus 8. But look at what happened. September 1, the net, minus 2, the disapproval above the approval, and now minus 5. So essentially going in the wrong direction. Not good. Clearly underwater at this point. So who is driving this, Harry?
Well, this, I think, gives you the picture of who's driving it. So it's Biden's net approval by the party of the voters. And you can see, look, he's down among Democrats, he's down among Republicans, and he's down among independents. But among Democrats, he's down 10. Among Republicans, he's down 12. But look at this. Among independent, he is down 19 points. He was in positive territory on August 1st at plus 3. He's now at minus 16 points net approval rating with independents. It's those folks in the center of the electorate who are driving this.
They've moved a lot, and they've moved pretty quickly. Why are independents particularly important for Joe Biden?
Because they are the reason that he won in the 2020 election. So this is comparing Joe Biden's 2020 margin to Hillary Clinton's 2016 party margin by party of voter. And what do you see here? You see that among independents, look at that, Joe Biden won by 13 points. This was a group that Hillary Clinton lost by 4. This was a massive change. 17 points movement towards Joe Biden. It was those voters in the center of the electorate who helped win him the election. And now that he is underwater with them, a very bad sign.
What are they seeing or not seeing?
Yeah, so I think this right here, look at this. So how much has Biden accomplished in office so far? In late April, look at this. 51%, a bare majority, but a majority nonetheless, said he accomplished a great or fair deal. Now look at late August. Look at this. Down to just 40%. Now the clear majority of voters say, look at this. 58% say he's accomplished only some or very little. So they don't think that Joe Biden has gotten to office and done very much.
I think vaccinations, which is a real push for the administration, and they got a lot of people vaccinated in late August with Delta, people may have not been feeling as good about that. That may be driving that. And there's another thing that maybe the White House could do or lean on going forward that could help turn this around?
I think they could. So, look, if you're not doing anything, the real way to solve that is to do something. So look at popularity of Joe Biden versus his Build Back Better agenda. And what do we see here? Look, Joe Biden's overall job performance, look, he's underwater at minus 5 points. But look at this, the $1.2 trillion infrastructure plan. A lot more people support that, 57%, than approve of Biden at 44. And even the $3.5 trillion social programs plan, look at that, 53% support. And you can see it here. Look at this net, plus 30, plus 20, minus 5. Doing something, passing this legislation, could boost his approval rating because it actually shows he's doing something.
And the church said amen. It's not very hard to figure out why Joe Biden's numbers are plummeting, even if some people think that is unfair. But here's the explanation. When you run a campaign from your basement to where people can rightfully say things like hide in Biden, you know, et cetera, and your campaign message is restore the soul of America, whatever that means, or return to normalcy, whatever that means, it's going to be very difficult when you get into the White House and you really don't have a mandate. Return to normalcy is a platitude. It's not a policy that explains anything. It is not a policy platform. Joe Biden supposedly was going to adopt the platform of some of the people in the Democratic primaries. Typically, people wanted him to adopt a lot of the platform of Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, something like that. And then it shows up in those numbers, not just the baseliners of the Democratic Party, but also with the independents. If Joe Biden's approval ratings are in the 40s and the infrastructure's plans are at 58%, and the Build Back America plan, the human infrastructure bill, is at 53%, and I think that is saying the common sense thing that needs to be said, is that if Joe Biden wants to win back those suburban independent voters that got him in the White House, he's going to have to deliver on something. He's going to have to bring home the bacon. And until then, he can expect to have his numbers keep sinking, because everything that goes wrong in the country, and now especially that you have supply chain issues, that is going to be laid directly at the feet of the commander-in-chief, whether you think it's right or not. So I think this is what happens when you run on a mantle of platitudes. And I think that everybody sees how desperate this situation is. Everybody sees how dire of a position the Democratic Party is in, because they've had to bring out the big guns. They had to bring out the former Democratic president, who still has very good approval numbers, Barack Obama. They brought Barack Obama to Virginia to campaign on behalf of Terry McAuliffe. And they also took Obama all the way to Newark to campaign in that race as well. So the fact that they have to pull out the previous president, who, by all intents and purposes, does not like to get his hands dirty into these types of things. He likes to be above the fray Obama really only gets involved in partisan politics nowadays when there is something progressive about to happen. If there's an Elizabeth Warren or a Bernie Sanders, it looks like they're about to ascend, then Barack Obama will appear. But, and that's just wrestling with his latest book and his legacy and everything else.
I know why sometimes folks just get tired, and then maybe they say, you know, I'm not going to bother voting this time. But here's the thing, we can't afford to be tired. I remember in 2016, folks said, you know, I'm not inspired. You know, Obama was okay, but we didn't get everything I wanted, so I'm just going to sit in next to. And, you know, y'all know how that turned out. That's what happens when you're not paying attention. That's what happens when you become complacent or you let your frustration lead to inaction. We cannot afford to be tired because of the young people here and the ones who are coming. I know it's hard. Phil doesn't claim he's going to solve every problem in New Jersey right away. I didn't solve every problem when I was president. But the fact is that as hard as it is, we can still make it better. It's hard to undo the legacy of discrimination that goes back centuries, but we can make it better. It's hard to deal with special interests who want to keep the status quo when you're trying to make the economy more fair and just, but you can make it better. It's hard in a big country where people disagree to get everybody moving in the same direction, but we can do better than we're doing. We really can. We can make it better. And when you've got the right person in the job, we might not get every single person employed, but we can get more people more jobs. We may not get every child the best education in the world right here in Newark. We can give a lot more kids a better education here in Newark. I didn't get every American health care, but boy, we got a whole lot more people in America. It makes a difference when we decide to make things better. When you've got somebody in your corner who's shown you that they will work for you, who has a track record of accomplishment, you got to go out there and work for them. Not because everything's going to suddenly be perfect, but because it's going to be better. And you're preventing others from making it worse.
So I think that was a very telling there. Because, one, Obama said the quiet parts out loud, especially the part about he had to have a proven track record of getting things done, which if that is the standard, then that means the Democrats are doomed because they have, right now, COVID vaccinations seem to be going well enough. The job mandate thing seems, people seem to be biting on it, although, of course, the culture war made medicine controversial, but either way, the pharmacy industry still wins. But he had to say this thing about when you get tired and complacent and it causes inaction and that's where bad things happen. And I think that is a truism, but I also think it's partially unavoidable because what you're describing is when people lose hope. There is a phrase that was common during the Obama years, and I want to say it was coined by Dr. Cornel West, but that may be wrong. But either way, it was a hope on a tightrope. And I used to always like the phraseology of that because it was like that is what real life is about. You, as a person, cast your hopes and aspirations onto a candidate. When said candidate doesn't deliver, it does give you a bit of a why are we doing this type of thought process. And what actually tends to happen is a lot of times instead of them making good all the promises that were made, what they do is they point to the perceived adversary on the other side of the aisle and say, we have to stop them from doing that thing to you. And most people take that bait. So I have a joke that I always somewhat say flippantly, and the joke is I have yet to meet a supporter of President Joe Biden. I have met a lot of people who hated President Donald Trump. And I think when you get to those poll numbers, that is going to be true, because Donald Trump was a phenomenon that people loved to get behind. It is whether it was his personality, whether it was the charisma, whether it was him known to be flattering, or whether it was him saying what people were thinking in their heads and were too afraid to say, he was a phenomenon unto himself. Bill Clinton had that same type of pull, where he could go in a room and charm people who were supposed to not like him. He could make me, Newt Gingrich, come over and they could balance a budget together, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Bill Clinton had that triangulation strategy that it was very effective. Now, of course, there's people who are more to the left of Bill who say, well, you know, Bill Clinton created the neoliberal policies that we kind of had to dig ourselves out of, and that is a conversation and a debate to be had. In the same vein, Barack Obama had that same pull, the charisma. People were happy and proud and excited to go vote for him, and were out buying posters with his name on it and talking about how transformational it was. And you had people with shirts with Dr. Martin Luther King right next to Barack Obama, that sort of thing. And that is just not a phenomenon that you have for Joe Biden. And because of that, you don't have that awe factor, that star factor. All you have is people who were just like, and so that shows out in the polls. It's not inspiring, it's just not the other guy. And that is going to always be something that he was going to have to wrestle with for his entire presidency. He imagined himself to be a FDR style Democrat, and he put up a picture of FDR in the White House so he could look at it, because that's who he imagines himself to be. Well, if he's going to be FDR, he's going to have to take the same tact that FDR did, which FDR, remember, famously, I welcome their hatred. And that is somebody Joe Biden is fundamentally just not. Speaking of FDR, and the New Deal programs and all this stuff, let's get a little reminder of who FDR is, and you can reflect on your own time as if Joe Biden is that. And then we can get to the meat and the potatoes of why people aren't inspired to run out and cast their votes again.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It goes without saying that this show does not happen without listener support. Support the Darrell McClain Show by going to www.patreon.com and getting a membership for $3. Or you can go to buzzsprouts.com/Darrell McClain Show and hit the subscribe button and join there. Many ways to donate to the show. Independent media that won't reinforce tribalism. We have one planet. Nobody is leaving. So let us reason together. www.patreon.com/Darrell McClain Show, or go to Buzzsprouts and to the Darrell McClain Show and subscribe.
For nearly 4 years now, you have had an administration which, instead of twirling its thumbs, has rolled up its sleeves. And I can assure you that we will keep our sleeves rolled up. struggle with the old enemies of peace, business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, sectionalism, war profiteering. They had begun to consider the government of the United States as a mere appendage to their own affairs. And we know now that government by organized money is just as dangerous as government by organized mob. Never before in all our history have these forces been so united against one candidate as they stand today. They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
Could you imagine Joe Biden saying anything like that? Could you imagine Joe Biden saying, I welcome their hatred? They hate me, I welcome their hatred. Could you imagine Nancy Pelosi saying, I don't care if they don't like me, I'm here to serve my constituents? Could you imagine Barack Obama saying anything like that? Pete Buttigieg or Amy Klobuchar or any of those Democrats, could you imagine them saying what FDR said as they somewhat try to carry on that FDR legacy? I think you cannot imagine that, and that is part of the problem where the Democratic Party has started to lose the middle class, has started to lose the working class, has started to lose the everyday voter, and we can't even, the everyday, I guess, independent voter who simply just wants the trains to run on time, the presents to be there on Christmas, to be able to go and, I guess, back to brunch and having their book clubs or whatever. And if they're not going to be delivered that, they're going to not consider what the Democratic Party is trying to give them. And by that, I mean the titular head, Joe Biden. Now, for record, that speech was from Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1936, and it was for his campaign speech in Madison Square Garden. I don't know how great the audio was, so I want to just say the words myself to listen to what he said, to, and I want us to think as this stuff that we still do it today. From 1936 to 2021, can we still look at the government and think that a lot has really changed? So, for nearly 4 years, you have had an administration which, instead of twirling its thumbs, has rolled up its sleeves, and we will keep our sleeves rolled up. We had to struggle with the old enemies of peace, business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, sectionalism, war profiteering. They had begun to consider the government of the United States as a mere appendage to their own affairs. We now know that government by organized money is just as dangerous as government by organized mob. Never before in all our histories have these forces been so united against one candidate as they stand today. They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred. I should like to have said of my first administration that this is the forces of selfishness and our lust for power met their match. I should like to have said it of my second administration that if these forces meet their masters. So, if you listen to the Democrat of the 1936 and you compare him to the Democrats of the 2021, it's going to seem like the party has gone off the rails, because not a lot of people will say that. Speaking of what the Democrats believed in 1936, let me go to FDR's proposal in that era to show you how far we haven't gone.
In our day, certain economic proofs have become accepted as self-evident. A second Bill of Rights, under which a new basis of security and prosperity can be established for all, regardless of station or race or creed. Among these are the right to a useful and remunerative job, the right to earn enough to provide adequate food and clothing and recreation, the right of every farmer to raise and sell his products at a return which will give him and his family a decent living. The right of every businessman, large and small, to trade in an atmosphere of freedom, freedom from unfair competition and domination by monopolies at home or abroad. The right of every family to a decent home. The right to adequate medical care and the opportunity to achieve and enjoy good health. The right to adequate protection from the economic fears of old age, sickness, accident, and unemployment. The right to a good education. All of these rights spell security. And after this war is won, we must be prepared to move forward in the implementation of these rights to new goals of human happiness and well-being. For unless there is security here at home, there cannot be lasting peace in the world.
So, what you just heard was, of course, the late President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. What he was proposing was, he called the Second Bill of Rights. This FDR proposed Second Bill of Rights that he delivered is wildly easy to find. And what I find so fascinating about it is he delivered that State of the Union address via a radio where he proposed what he wanted on January 11th in 1944. And I think about that when I look at this from the historical narrative of where the Democratic president wanted us to be in 1944 versus where Democrats find themselves at, preparing for an absolute shellacking in the midterms again in 2021. That is very telling. The election that people need to pay attention to kind of segue here, would be the one with it coming up in Virginia, with the Governor Terry McAuliffe versus his opponent. I'm sorry, I can't forget the guy's name. But at any rate, Joe Biden won Virginia in the presidential election by 10 points. So, by all intents and purposes, Virginia jumped, or they were saying was that Virginia jumped from being what was being called a purple state to being a blue state. If Terry McAuliffe not just loses, but if he barely wins, so if Terry McAuliffe only beats his opponent by 2 points, if he beats him by 1 point, that means the Democrats are screwed, because you go from a 10-point lead to to only barely holding on by 1 point. And Virginia is one of those places that they have an off-year election, so it's the first election that the people get to respond to right after the presidency has been taken. Historically, the person that has won the White House, the party normally loses Virginia. And that had rang true for decades. The only person to actually buck that trend was actually Terry McAuliffe. when Donald Trump won as president, instead of them taking the state of Virginia as well, Terry McAuliffe held on, you know, when Clinton lost. So they brought him back out again, Terry McAuliffe, to see if he could somehow again buck that trend, the trajectory of where goes Virginia, thus goes the country. So while I was absent from recording, General Colin Powell, who was America's most prominent American soldier of his generation, passed away. So General Colin Powell, who had suffered from blood cancer and Parkinson's disease, died from COVID-related complications at the age of 84 years old on October the 18th. He was not only the most senior black military officer in American history, but also the most prominent American soldier of any race of the last 20th century. His approach to waging war, which ensued, became the basis of what would become known as the Powell Doctrine, the notion that America should go to war only when, among other conditions vital to national security interests, were at stake, the objectives were clear and attainable, and all other options had been exhausted, and an exit strategy was in place, was the Powell Doctrine. In a sense, Powell's career reflected the arc of the American military history from the Vietnam to Iraq. And he has now transitioned to become one of the ancestors. Now, because everything is cultural war territory, when Colin Powell passed away, the anti-vax movement have already weaponized Colin Powell's death, because he was fully vaccinated. So they have latched on to the fact that he was fully vaccinated and still died from COVID-19 implications. And of course, they will ignore that he was suffering from melanoma, cancer of the blood, as well as Parkinson's disease, which could have, or definitely would have, significantly impacted his body's ability to fight COVID-19. A while back, General Powell actually posted a picture of himself, kind of trying to be tongue-in-cheek. He posted a picture of himself when he was a young man, and he said that he was one of the first people to ever take a selfie. When he took the picture, obviously he was joking. And he said that he had been taking selfies for 60 years longer than the rest of us. And he often spoke of 13 rules that, if followed, it would give you, keep you on the right track. So number one, it ain't as bad as you think. It will look better in the morning. Two, get mad, then get over it. Three, avoid having your ego so close to your position that when your position falls, your ego goes with it. Four, it can be done. Five, be careful what you choose. Six, don't let adverse facts stand in the way of a good decision. Seven, you can't make someone else's choices. Eight, check small things. 9. Share credit. 10. Remain calm. Be kind. 11. Have a vision. 12. Don't take counsel of your fears or naysayers. And 13. Perpetual optimism is a force multiplier. So, rest in peace to the late General Colin Powell. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Of course, if you want to support the show, you can do so by going to www.patreon.com and getting a membership for as little as $3 a month. Again, that's www.patreon.com/The Darrell McLean Show. The Darrell McLean Show is fully listener-supported, independent media that won't lead you to tribalism. Get a membership and support independent media at www.patreon.com/The Darrell McLean Show.